Warrior football. True Warrior football. True Warrior football.
You are listening to True Warrior Football Podcast with your host, Corey Kid Smith.
Good day and happy holidays, ladies and gentlemen. I am back. And I, your host, Corey Kid Smith, have a great, great show for you this evening. You know what? I don't even know how to really step into how great of an interview I have for you guys today. But before I do that, I just want to give an update on a few things. First thing is congrats to Michael Tutsi on winning his second national championship with North Dakota State this past weekend. Congratulations to him. I will have a piece with him later next week to talk about his time and stuff like that. So be on the lookout for that one. Also, we do have the winners. I do have the winners just about for the first annual True Warrior Football Podcast Awards. I won't give all the winners out right now, but I will say thank you to everybody that voted for the Warriors Choice Award. And I was very surprised by the outcome and the winner. And I will say that, of course, everybody knows who won by now if you've been following me on Twitter. But congratulations to the defense. The goal line stop against Center Grove was chosen by you all, my viewers and listeners, as the top play slash moment from this past state championship winning season. So congratulations to everybody that was on the defense. And though, of course, I had Ronnie and Caleb on the show to talk about that play a few episodes back, but it was a goal line stand like that. It's just not two people making one play, you know, on that fourth down. It was multiple people making plays for those, that whole fourth down, those whole four downs right there. So congratulations to everybody on the defense that was out there that made that play, those series of plays in that moment, the biggest moment of the season. And you guys should be very proud of yourselves, very proud of yourselves. And with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to let this interview speak for itself.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, when I start this show, folks, first of all, let me introduce, I am your host, Corey Kid Smith. This is true. You're listening to True Warrior Football Podcast. And when I start this show, I knew I had to have this individual on at some point. I had been talking with my wife about, you know, I got to get these great guests on. I got to get these great guests on. And she was like, well, who's your number one guest you want to get on? I was like, the main guy I want to get on, I had to get on the airplane and fly and see him. It's like, well, we can't do that because we don't have enough money for that. I was like, But babe, I want to do this. We're like, no, it's not going to happen. Not now. So just wait. So thankfully, he's in town. He is this. To call him the Godfather, I don't think would be appropriate enough because there's not a high enough term for this individual. He's basically the reason why I am who I am today. He's the reason why we have such a great history in our program. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the show, legendary coach, Coach Kevin Wright. Coach Wright, how are you doing today?
Kid, I'm great, brother. That was a heck of an introduction, maybe the best I've ever had.
Well, if that's the best you ever had, that's a shame. You need to get those guys down there in Florida, give you some more props, man.
I'm excited to be here. You know, it's it's been a heck of a ride, you know, as you mentioned, and to take a few years and go back to the Warren Central days, as I mentioned when we were off the air, you know, my wife and I actually just drove, you know, we went to our old house on the east side where both kids were born last night. Just, you know, what else do we have to do on a Sunday night? Drove by, saw the stadium, you know, just kind of get prepared mentally for this, you know, for this interview, but excited about it.
It's really great. And also, ladies and gentlemen, we are also joined by Coach Wright's lovely wife, the matriarch of the program, Miss Liz Wright. I could call her Coach Liz Wright as well. I mean, you've coached a lot of our great players over the years and decades. Say hello to everybody out there.
Hello, everyone. Happy holidays and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year indeed to everyone that's out there listening. I'm just so glad you took the time to sit down with me, Coach Wright. This has just been, the show's taken off. I've had a lot of great guests on the show. I had Jay on, I've had Coach Tutsi on, I had Coach Burton on. Now being able to have you, the person that really changed and molded the program into really a national powerhouse that it is today. So let's get this thing started. How, of course, you grew up in a coaching family, okay? Your father, legendary Sheridan coach, Bud Wright. How did you make the transition from this into coaching and everything like that? How did you really get your start, Coach?
Yeah, probably like a lot of guys, a lot of young men growing up. You know, I was introduced to my father's profession at an early age. I was around it, you know, basically 24/7. I mean, if I wanted to spend time with him, that's what I had to do, was go to work, go to his work, which was, you know, football field. So, you know, I think that kind of gets ingrained in you young. Really, though, went to college and had plans, wanted to go to law school, had a lot of things I wanted to do. And when I graduated, got an opportunity, really got a call from the athletic director at North Central High School, who just happened to be my uncle. It always helps to have connections. Roland Inskeep, whose son Jim Inskeep is the AD at Carmel. And, you know, so that he couldn't give me the job, but that there was a job opportunity there to coach football and coach girls basketball if I was interested. So
coaching girls basketball. That's interesting.
It was a great experience for me to do both. And we actually did back in the day coach girls and boys track as well up at Sheridan. So I coached three sports the first year. But you know, it was one of those things where, you know, growing up we didn't have a lot, and it was an opportunity to have a little bit of money in my pocket. So I can remember, you know, saying, hey, we'll put law school on hold, go back at later at some point in life, and you know, accept the opportunity. And I think after I signed my first contract, the first thing we did was my dad and I went and we bought a brand new car, and I never had a car that was less than 15 years old at the time. So for the next 4 years, you know, I lived life large, and yeah, I coached every season, boys and girls, multiple sports, and you know, never really looked back.
That's incredible. And now let's get into the meat and potatoes of this. How did you, I know you've had a long coaching history of coaching at very successful high school programs in the country outside of Warren Central. Of course, you coached your years at Carmel. You were a head coach for a season at Tulsa Union in Oklahoma. You were a head coach for a few years at Trinity High School in Louisville. You are currently the head coach of IMG Academy in Bradenton, Florida. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Yeah, I thought it was Bradenton. I didn't want to say it the wrong city, but tell me how you got your start at Warren and everything like that. How did that come around?
Yeah, it's really an interesting story because, you know, I was fortunate enough to be a head coach at 26 years of age. And
wow. That's so young.
It was. I mean, I probably thought I knew a lot more at 26 than I knew at 30 or 35, quite honestly. Uh-huh. I mean, you know, sometimes you have to have a little bit of confidence that you can go in. But the first two jobs I actually had were at Frankfort High School, which they were 0-20 in the two previous seasons, and then went from Frankfort to Noblesville. That was 1-9 the year before I got. So, you know, both those two programs were major rebuilding jobs. And then, you know, I applied for the job at Trinity High School in Louisville, which is a national powerhouse, and you know, was fortunate to get that job. And we bought a house, we settled in, we went 11-2, and again, they had just come off their worst season in decades, and so things, you know, we were really excited about being there, and just had some things happen with my father-in-law, with his health, and then with my mom, with her health, just back to back. And we started looking at each other and saying, well, maybe, you know, God's telling us we may need to try to find a way to get back home. You know? And wasn't really something we wanted to do, quite honestly. And started looking around, and there was one job open at the time, and it was Warren Central High School on the east side. And growing up in Hamilton County and having been a head coach at Noblesville, we actually, back in the day, there was a jamboree. It was a Hamilton County versus Marion County jamboree. So we actually, it was Carmel, Noblesville, Warren Central, and North Central, I believe.
Okay.
And so I was pretty familiar with playing Warren, you know, knew a little bit about the program. Obviously, I grew up the same time Jeff George was growing up and winning state championships with Jason Whitlock and Shannon Furbrush and that whole group. I don't want to shortchange Ron Clark. I don't want to shortchange any of those guys because, you know, the tradition goes way back. But, you know, it's one of those things where the job was open. And I remember the night before I was supposed to interview, you know, we were sitting there and we said, well, let's just suck it up and stay. Let's just call them and say no. And I got an hour later, I got a phone call from my brother saying my mom was in a near-fatal accident and had been lifelined to Methodist Hospital, had hit a pole. I said, okay, I think we better try and get back. So I can remember being in the interview and being asked questions, is that your mom that's on TV, because it was all over the TV station when, the next day. So nothing happens by coincidence. You know, it was one of those deals where it was, I can remember, I think it was a 24-person interview committee, three different groups. You went round and round.
Really? For the Warren job?
For the Warren job, yeah. They were 3-7 the year before, but, you know, it was a gold mine. I think people knew it, that was, you know, there was potential there. You know, the program had just, you know, kind of fallen on hard times. And, you know, I think the numbers were, there were 60-some upperclassmen, I think 30-some freshmen, if you believe it or not. I mean, there's about less than 100 kids in the program at the time. So, you know, but people saw the potentials. I saw the potential. And, you know, everything just kind of fell in place. And, you know, small world, even going back further, one of the guys on the committee was a guy named Rich Shepler, who played in the All-Star game with me, in the North-South All-Star game.
Really?
He was a quarterback the year we both graduated the same year, and he was on the interview committee.
I did not know that.
Yeah. So small world, no coincidences, but it all worked out, and we came to the east side.
Well, you know what's crazy? You say you see potential, but when I look back, I know all this is before the time before I really got involved with the program and everything like that. So, like, when I look back at the records of the 90s, we weren't really that talented, or if we were that talented, results didn't show on the field. There were, like you said, a 3-7 season. That we had games against Ben Davis where we were absolutely, it was no contest, really. And then here you step in, and I can see those first 2 years. I think we go like 10-3 and then 11-2 those first, or 12-2 those first 2 years or something like that. Of your time there, Warren, and then I see from there, when I come around in 2002 as a freshman, that's where everything really starts to change and turn around. How exactly were you able to really, let's really work the program to getting over that hump of beating Ben Davis and really getting us to where we were a program that could compete for state titles?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. I mean, Ben Davis was a gold standard. I mean, you know, if
absolutely,
you go back and you look at when Coach Delahan came in the late 80s, or mid 80s, I guess, when he first got there, you know, he hired, you know, he just got back from the college ranks, actually, and hired Mike Kirshner, Kevin Vanderbush as a strength coach. So they were doing things in the 80s that I think put them, you know, and even from, you know, the way they were organized, they were doing it on a college level, whereas everybody else was playing catch up. Mm-hmm. And you know, and the results on the field showed. And so get to Warren and, you know, you're looking around, and I can remember the first meeting I had with the staff. You know, we went around the table, and I always tell people this. We went around the table, and I said, okay, tell me one reason why we can beat Ben Davis. And maybe only Dave Burton was the guy that said, gave me a reason why we could beat. I mean, all the other reasons were reasons why we couldn't beat Ben Davis, which, you know, really kind of threw me for a little bit. But I think the big thing in my point from that was it was just changing the mindset and changing the culture, you know, because as history has shown, there's a lot of talent on the east side, and you would say at least equal to, if not, you know, more given the year, as the west side of town, very similar situations.
Yes.
And it was just getting people to buy into the strengths of Warren Central High School, the strengths of the kids who are growing up on the east side, and, you know, enthusiasm is contagious. And so I think, you know, the very first game we played against Ben Davis, my first year, it was a 14-7 game at Warren, and we actually dropped a pass. I'm not going to mention the guy's name, but I remember the guy. He dropped the pass on the one-yard line. They would have probably tied the game. You know, I think people started to believe. They started to believe a little bit. And, you know, we played – we ended up winning a sectional, which I think they had only won one sectional since the mid-80s when Jeff and
Ned won. There had been a drought there, yeah.
Yeah, so we won the sectional and ended up playing Ben Davis again. And again, a game I'll never forget. I think it was – they went ahead 33-0 in the first half. At one point, we came back. I think we tied it at 33-0, and then they scored 30 more, and it was 60-something to 30-something in the regional. But, again, I think that people started to believe a little bit. And then, you know, the next couple years, it was just part of continue to build, get bigger, get stronger, build the numbers. You know, you got coaches in that, you know, guys that, you know, a guy like Marcus Clayton, who's now the AD, or Emil Ikior, Steve Tutsey, guys like that. You got guys, Fred Roman. I mean, I really hate to start mentioning guys because the list is so long.
Yes.
Of just guys that I think are difference makers even today in what they're doing. But, yeah, I mean, the big signature win was probably 2002, even though we got beat in the regional again by Ben Davis. But in the regular season when we beat Ben Davis – on ESPN, and I think it was one where we said, okay, we're right where we need to be. You know, we just have to, we just have to finish the job and get it done in the playoffs, which we were able to do in 2003.
I definitely agree with all that you just said there, especially the staff. Looking back on the staff that you guys were able to put together, I remember just being around the locker room or the coach's office and hearing, I think it was Coach DeRosset or Coach Burton or Coach Crum, somebody saying that they felt like we had the best coaching staff in the nation. And that's the things that you guys were able to do with the talented players that we had. And just being at Warren Central, we have a volatile group of great players, and it's very hard to win with our guys. It is very hard. People look at it as like, oh, well, it's easy. No, it's not when you got a guy that, you know, has trouble issues at home, or, is, you know, there's drugs in the family or stuff like that. It is hard to win with our group of players, and you and your wife did an outstanding job of just really getting a good hold of so many of our guys and keeping them on track. Was that something that you thought you would be working hard in when you got the Warren job, or is that just it's part of being a coach, I think, right?
Well, I think that was part of the plan when you went in. I mean, you had to have a plan going in on total player development. Mm-hmm. And that was – and it wasn't just the on the field. It was the off the field. And you know, the leadership at the time, Tony Burchett was a principal, and Tony had been a coach – on the state championship team,
yes.
You know, in the 80s, and was a Warren guy. And, you know, he was a visionary guy. I mean, he enabled us to, you know, to bring in great people. And you know, a minute ago I missed a guy. You know, you brought in guys like Jeff Massey, who had played there. You know, Larry Willen came, you know, has always been there. So you had guys that could talk, and Ron Clark, I mentioned that, you know, you had guys who could talk about the tradition, but, you know, when you started to break it down, you needed to provide really a total program for kids, and to the degree where, you know, the academic component, the social component, the athletic component all kind of went together, and you started to really build a true family. And, you know, the running joke was, from a staff standpoint, was that I wasn't going to hire anybody that didn't have an SUV, because you had to go pick guys up, take them home, take them to colleges, you know, do all those things. And, you know, we were just, again, we were just very blessed to have coaches like that all the way through the program.
Yes.
And, but it started with Tony Burchett, and the administrative support. The support within the, with the teachers was incredible. The school spirit. I'll never forget going to Ryle, Kentucky to play Cincinnati Elder. We brought 10 fan buses. I mean, who does
That's
that?
That's incredible now to think about that, because it's hard for us to even get one full fan bus now. And for us to get a program at the time that hadn't won a state title in 15, 16 years, to get a full fan bus, like, that is incredible. Or not a full fan bus, 10 fan buses full of students, full of fans that want to come and travel an hour and a half away to watch a football game. That's unheard of now. Like, there's no way we could do that now. Like, they tried to have one fan bus go down for the game and at Trinity this year, and the bus broke down on the way there, and they couldn't do it. And it was just one fan bus. Like, we had 10. That is just so incredible that we, where our program was at that time, and where I look back at it now, like, that's, it's just really incredible. And I said this before on the podcast. I don't think people understood how great of a program we were at the time. But when you look back at it, like, our run was just absolutely incredible, Coach. Absolutely incredible.
Well, I think you got a combination of all the stars aligning. I mean,
yes.
And you start looking at, let's dig a little deeper into school spirit, because, mm-hmm. you know, one of the things that Tony told me way back when was that, you know, if the football team can have a good season, that's going to carry school spirit all the way to Thanksgiving, and now you're already done with the first semester and you've already set the tone.
Yes.
So, you know, you go inside the school, if you remember, and you were a student, you know, one of the most important guys inside that school was a guy named Dennis Jarrett, mm-hmm. who, you know, started the video announcements and, you know, gave me an opportunity every Friday, and I was blessed to have a guy named Tyrone Dixon, who
yes.
was a player and, you know, really is a legend in his own right, you know,
he
doing
is.
Announcements on Friday mornings. You know, they let us, you know, get the band involved, so the, you know, the kids are coming off the bus and the band's playing as they're walking in, you know, which gets them integrated into the system. You know, we used to play videos in the school cafeteria, highlight videos in the school cafeteria. You know, do the, like I said, the Friday morning coaches show. We did some crazy stuff just to get people engaged. But, you know, football and having a great program, the more people that you could get involved. And we're talking about now, we're talking about teachers, we're talking about administrators, we're talking about kids, you know the guys from the performing arts department, just everybody, cheerleaders, all those people, I think helped promote, you know, something that we all knew was special. I don't think we knew how special it was or it was going to be, you know, until we, you know, probably started looking back years later. But again, combination of great people, and then you got kids that bought in. I mean, that's
absolutely.
The other thing, kids had to buy in. And you know, I think back now on, you know, how unselfish guys were in that situation, which is not always, when you have some talented players, which we did, it's not always an easy thing to sell. You know, but the things that I always saw about kids, and I heard, you know, Jason West actually refer to this a little bit after the game, you know, that kind of cracks me, or kind of makes me emotional, but just that the East Side toughness. I mean, that's inbred. I mean, and I think that's what people, you know, you can't see, you can't judge a man's heart. But I knew that when I went there, we had tough kids, and they just needed to find a way to bring that out in a controlled manner on the football field. Yes. And, you know, it made a great outlet. But, you know, we had tough kids, and they're still tough kids. And we drove by the stadium last night, and, you know, the sign that says tradition never graduates. And we used to talk about that, and that goes all the way back, way before I even got there, but that toughness, you know, I mean, you know, before the East Side was what it is today, you know, it was a very blue collar place. And I think that mentality has never left. And, you know, I saw it, you know, I watched the state championship game, watched a couple other games streamed. You could see it in the guys that played this year, just that same, you know, those same characteristics.
We definitely have brought back a lot of physical toughness this season that I feel like was evident or reminiscent of the years where you were involved and Coach Hussey was involved in the program. Matter of fact, let's step aside before we get into talking about some games, because there's some games we want to talk about. Coach Hussey, how were you able to get him over here from Decatur Central, and what were your thoughts about working with him? Because he's one of my great friends and mentors and stuff like that, but I know when you came across him that first time, you're like, who is this guy?
Yeah, I mean, I don't, if you've ever met Steve, you know, he's a high energy guy, you know, you know,
he's like a chihuahua almost, man.
You need a high energy guy, and so I think that, you know, at that point in time, you know, I knew that, you know, we were going to win football games. We're going to beat Ben Davis by playing great defense and running the football. I mean, that's kind of what, keeping the ball away from their offense. So you needed somebody that could be an architect of a great defense. And I think this, to play great defense, you need great energy. And you know, he brought that and passion. And the other thing about Steve was that, and still is today, he's a lifelong learner. I mean, he's always trying to get better. I mean,
absolutely.
You know, if anybody ever looked in the trunk of his car, you'd find videos, and, you know, you'd find playbooks. You'd find, you know, anything that he could collect to get better as a coach, he collected, and he still does that today. And you know, that's sometimes he's a little bit of a mad scientist, you know, in that regard. But, you know, again, you got a guy that's driven to be better and doesn't rest on laurels. And the bottom line is, too, he loves kids. I mean, he loves football, but he loves kids. He's a difference maker. And so, you know, I think just spending a little bit of time with him early on, you know, I knew that it was going to be a great he was going to be a great right-hand man in a lot of different ways, and he sure ended up being that to me, for sure.
Well, you definitely had a great you definitely picked the right person, because when I look back on him now in his career, he definitely embodies everything the Warrior spirit. Really, we come to think of toughness, that's really we carry ourselves with a swagger, and he definitely did that in his coaching style. It's the reason why so many of his former players over the years love him. Like, there was at the state championship game, so many defensive guys that were out there, and all those guys told me, I was like, man, I love playing for Coach Tussie's defense and all that stuff like that. And it's like, you definitely brought in the right person for the right job to help coach our defense and really get us over that hump of, because you're right, if we were going to beat Ben Davis, we were going to beat them playing great defense and running the ball. And running the ball, especially with, I think Mark Bynes was a freshman your first year, mm-hmm. or was it your second year? I can't remember.
I don't remember which year Mark was a freshman. I just remember when I first saw Mark, he was a 14-year-old grown man.
Yes.
But yeah, he you know, he was there early on. You know, it was evident early that, you know, we needed to use those skill guys and get a lot of guys involved. And so, you know, I've heard the offense described a lot of different ways, but basically we were an option wing T team. And, you know, today, you know, it's interesting because you hear people talk about touch charts at the college level and the NFL level, trying to get the ball spread around. And what we needed to do was to be able to spread the ball around to our playmakers. And so, you know, I think we had that 1 year in 2002 where we had four guys that
four 1,000-yard rushers, including the quarterback.
Which means that, you know, you've got good skill guys, but also means that Fred Roman was doing a heck of a job coaching those offensive linemen. And then the receivers, you know, guys like Adrian Robinson who went on to play in the NFL, I mean, those receivers were very unselfish guys. Yes. I mean, they were willing to block and knowing that they weren't going to get the ball thrown to them a lot. And, you know, so it was, you know, a situation, I think, where, you know, you had Mark, you had, you know, Stephen Willis, who went on to have a great college career, you know, himself. I mean, you just on and on, you know, and again, I'm going to miss guys' names, but, you know.
The other guy was Aaron Lacy.
Well, Aaron Lacy, and then I'm thinking of, you know, you had the Ellington kid. You know, they just kept coming. And then Darren Evans was a sophomore at one point, and you know, and he just came from nowhere. You know, you can go back to my first year with Corey Gillespie at the quarterback, and you know, we were blessed with some really good skill kids, and especially guys at the quarterback position with Corey and then Desmond and then Dexter, and you know, and you had other guys in between that played as well, but. Just kind of naming some of those guys that I ended up being Mr. Football. So combination of things. But, again, I think the thing that gets left out sometimes is those guys up front because we didn't always have the biggest or the strongest offensive linemen. I don't think they did this year, but they had blue-collar guys that stayed on blocks, that were coachable, that were disciplined. And, again, that's usually any byproduct of good coaching and having Fred – as an offensive line coach, he was a difference maker on the staff in and of himself.
We did not have a lot of high-profile offensive linemen like a lot of programs did before you came in. But when you came in, of course, I think we started having a lot more. We had the Clevengers, the Andrew Campbells, the Z Coverts, and then you get the J.O., Brian Beeler, Jacob McLaurin, those group of guys. And really, I looked at it. Over the years, we've had more – I think during that span, we had more offensive linemen than any other position group make all conference, which is just incredible. So that was, once again, we're going to win football. We're going to win rushing the ball, running the ball hard and physical and be dominant against our opponent. I truly feel like that was where we asserted ourselves in the gameplay. I remember you always said – we want to take the fight to them and take the fight out of our enemy.
Yeah.
And just really beat them into submission, I believe. And a lot of times teams would get down against us and really there was no hope. So I remember Coach Sussy once said teams were often beat by the time we got off the bus. And a lot of times that was true. And sometimes, you know, there were teams that fought hard against us. And I think about – the years of our program, we had that great 2003 state championship game against Penn. Did you feel coming into that game that it was going to be, it was going to turn out that quick and fast for us like that?
Yeah, 2003 is a year I'll never forget because that was a year.
It was a tough year for you, yes.
Yeah, I mean, that was a year that actually, my mom committed suicide this Saturday after the first Ben Davis game. I mean, so, you know, you have this ultimate high of beating Ben Davis and then the ultimate low of finding out, you know, something as tragic as what I found out, you know, in the middle of season. And to the credit of the players and coaches, you know, I basically had to leave for a couple weeks, came back the Carmel game, and what ended up to be the infamous two-night game, which when I went to Carmel, they never forgot it either because they won the game, but I didn't quite remember it the same way they did. You know, it was a situation where we were able to, you know, pull together through adversity. And I think that, you know, if you go back and look at that, you know, we had a tough game against Lawrence North in the sectional where we almost lost. I mean, I think Desmond made an incredible play. He was injured, and I think he made a couple incredible plays.
One of the muddier games I've ever seen in my entire life.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very physical game as well. But, you know, Desmond, who's Desmond Tardy, who's actually on my staff right now, Small World.
Yes. You know, shout out to Coach Tardy.
Yeah, shout out to Coach Tardy. You know, we were talking about this the other day, you know, in the staff meeting about we walked through what was in, I believe, the RCA Dome. And just by chance, you know, we happened to cross paths with the Penn Kingsmen, who, you know, at the time, you know, they had won multiple state championships, you know, in the prior decade. And, you know, we didn't know. And I think the best thing that could happen to us was, you know, they laughed. They literally, I remember watching their players. I remember the crew cuts and the dyed blonde hair and all those things like it was yesterday. But they laughed at us.
No, they didn't.
As I used to say, we don't look like everybody else when we get off the bus, you know, in a lot of different ways. We're very diverse as a football team, you know, in our makeup. But I think they were that confident that, you know, once they saw us, they were that confident that, you know, they could win the game. And that made for a great pregame speech. And I think that when we walked out on the field, you know, there was no way we were going to, you know, we were going to lose that football game. And really, we went out with a vengeance. And, you know, it was a game where I remember looking up at halftime and you know, probably the first time I'd smiled for months, given what I'd gone through, and because it was 50-0. I mean, it went that fast. But that kind of got it started and rolling. And I think that the last thing that, you know, I remember telling our kids was, you know, in regards to Penn, was be careful what you wish for because you might just get it, because they, you know, they wanted us and, you know, and
they got it
and they got us. And, you know, really after that game, there was no looking back, you know, for the next 4 or 5 years.
Yes. And it was people still talk about that dominance. And I hear people come up to me all the time or online and stuff. It's like, oh, man, the greatest thing I ever saw was that 2003 state championship game. I never seen a performance like that from Desmond Tardy. He was just all over the place. I've never seen a more physical, dominating team than that Warren Central defense and that whole team as an overall. That is one of the top five greatest victories in our program's history, Coach. And, like, it really it solidified the greatness that the program had and that team had, and it said, hey, Warren Central is truly back. And really, the next 3 years, we had great teams, but I always like to talk about the 2004 team, because that team right there, I don't know, that was my first year in the program, but I always felt that the team was going to be special, but it wasn't until years later there were people that actually felt like that team was not going to be the one, because we lost Desmond Tardy. We lost a lot of great offensive linemen. We were really young. We lost Mark Bonds, of course. We lost Chris Graham, this all-star linebacker to Michigan. And so many people wrote us off, I felt like. But I never felt like that going into the season, because I knew, just being in around the hallway and in the school, I knew the guys that were coming up were going to be ready. And all season, like, we were – it was a close game against Ben Davis. We had a close game against North Central. We had the close loss at Center Grove. What do you remember about that Center Grove game, by the way? Because I remember Coach Tussey, we talked about that one briefly. But 50-49 final score, and we were up 28-7 at half. Did you feel like that game would go that way or anything like that?
Well, you know, I'll say this. You know, Center Grove is probably the toughest place to play in the state of Indiana. I mean, incredible mojo.
Center Grove and Carmel, I think, are the two toughest places outside of Warren.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you're exactly right. I mean, I think that, you know, I coached at Carmel, so, it is a tough place, you know, for opponents to come into and into the Palace. I guess just from coaching at Carmel and Warren, I would say that the toughest place, in my opinion, to play at is probably Center Grove, just because you're driving south of the city, for one.
Yes.
So it feels like you're out in the middle of the country. And then they have tremendous school pride. Mm-hmm. You know, they redid their stadium, but, I mean, at the time, you know, it was a little small with the stadium, and they enclosed the end. And
they packed that place.
They packed
every
the place,
home
and they
game.
Were loud. And I The thing I remember most is the Sunday meeting, because we knew they were good. They had a kid named J.B. Paxson who was a big-time player, and we knew they were good. And wing T offense is hard to defend in and of itself, and nobody does a better job than what Coach Moore does and what they do at Center Grove. But, you know, I asked Coach Tussie, it's kind of a running joke. I said, okay, how many points do we need to score to win a game? You know, and I think he said 35. I don't remember what it was. We scored 49, and we still lost. So, but I remember, you know, it's just one of those things where we were ahead, and then the tide turned, and momentum is huge, especially in high school sports, and you know we couldn't get it back, and all the way to the very last 2-point play, I remember, you know, they broke the formation and. Broke the huddle and went into a formation that we had not prepared against and not seen, and hats off to them. But great football game, and I think that sometimes you learn more in a loss than you do in a win, and that was certainly the case, and we were able to use that to build off of.
Yeah, so we definitely built off of that one. I think, and I remember that was a game, Jeremy Finch, as a sophomore, that was the one game that season he did not play. I think it was a shoulder issue or something like that, but he stepped up in a big way the next week against North Central and had a key interception for us. And really, the team, I think that game really helped our team, like you said, and catapulted us. And it wasn't until we faced Ben Davis in the regional game that year, which is another this amazing game. I've talked about it several times on the show. We were down, of course, 12 points going into the fourth quarter. What were your thoughts, if you can remember, about late in that game and what we need to do to pull it out?
Well, that game stands out to me as well because, we were down, and, the opposing coach was Tom Allen, that year. And Tom,
now coach
at Indiana University, is, probably one of the best defensive minds, in the country, even at this point, at the college level. And they were so well coached, that every time we try to do what we had traditionally done, they were right there. But I think that, I really always felt like we were still in the game. We knew that we were going to have to throw the football down the field, because their safety was screaming downfield, screaming downhill, making so many plays. And I don't think you win state championships without great senior play. And if you remember a guy named Josh Bailey, he was kind of overlooked the year before. But Josh, makes two catches on the exact same play. Play action play that we ran off the option, and Dexter got it just far enough out there able to make the play and score. And it was just guys finding a way to win and not quitting till the very end. But it was a typical Ben Davis Warren game and went down to the end. And I think our guys were able to just find a way to make plays. But, definitely a classic.
Definitely was a classic game. We came out victorious 27-26, and we just rolled on, rolled over Columbus North. They had a great team, but they just weren't ready to compete with us. The speed that we brought into that game was just too much for them. And then the 2004 state championship game against Fort Wayne Snyder, as close of a team I can think, and complexity that we had, that we faced in a state championship run during those, during your three straight years of coaching in state championship games. I think that Fort Wayne Snyder team was as close to us. They had a lot of speed and some great players over there. What do you remember about leading up into that game?
Well, I remember that they had lost their best tailback, so they were minus one.
Yes, I remember.
That helped obviously from a defense, helped us from a defensive standpoint. It still felt good about the fact that they hadn't faced the same type of competition. I mean, they had a similar makeup with the speed and size and athleticism. Some of the things they did on offense, they're an option dominated team in regards to their scheme. But I felt good about the fact that our kids had been there, and that we played such a tough, if you remember, and it's still the same way. I mean, if you're going to go through the southern part of the big school tournament, you're going to play MIC team after MIC team for the second time.
Yes.
And and that's even harder to beat teams twice. And mm-hmm. and you know, there were years there in that run where we actually helped us that we didn't win the first time, because I think it made us prepare that much harder and got our focus back. But you know, I think that in that particular game, you know, you saw that's where a guy like J.O., you know, his leadership, I just remember him being very vocal that game up front at the center position, and really, you know, defense stepping up and offense doing enough to win. But I do remember a guy like J.O. that, you know, that was his coming out party, so to speak, just in my mind, just in regards to his leadership. And you know, he was going to will that team to win along with Dexter and some of those other guys. But when you got the offensive lineman, when you got the center that's willing everybody else to win with that type of voice in the locker room, you know, you got a chance. And so we had.
Yeah, I definitely remember Jason really taking off and just being this, such a great player and leader for our team. I still consider him to be one of the greatest offensive linemen to come through in program history. He was definitely the best outspoken leader on the team our senior year in 2005, which was happened to be it turned out to be your last year. And I remember I talked to Coach Burton about this, and Coach Tussie always jokes about this. The practice you kicked the offense out the off the field, was that something that you had felt like you need to do for that team to be successful? Because when I look back on it, we were as talented of a team as there had ever been in Warren Central history at that point. We were coming off two consecutive state championships. We had a running back that everybody was going to want. We had a quarterback that was coming back. That was talented. We had a great offensive line. We had great defensive players across the board. But that team was just extremely talented. But Coach Burton felt like when you finally did kick them out of practice, that was something that he felt you should have did sooner. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, I think that
– And have you had to use that tactic again on any of your teams?
I think that you know, when you're in a situation where you've had so much success for so long, mm-hmm. you know, your practices aren't always as sharp as what you'd like to be. I mean, guys start to feel like, you know, that they can show up and win on Friday, you know. And I didn't want us to be complacent. We were very, very talented. You know, you had a tremendous junior class to go with that senior class. So, you know, I think that it was a situation where, you know, I just wanted to prove a point. And I can remember this day, you know, basically locking the gate and those guys wanting to come back in, and we just said no. And, you know, you wanted to make them a little bit mad. You wanted to get their focus back and make sure that wouldn't happen again. And, you know, I think that, you know, it got our point across, and, you know, we're able to refocus and win a third straight, which – you know, again, at that point, had not been done.
I think Penn was the only team that had won three straight, and that was in the mid-90s.
Yeah, it was in the mid-90s. So we were trying to do something that had been done once, I guess. But, you know, it was just, you know, sometimes you're just off the cuff. But, you know, it was one of those where we were probably good enough. We didn't even need to practice, obviously. But at the same time, knowing what was ahead of us down the road, you know, that you couldn't have an off night in the MIC, or you could get beat, and knowing again that playoff run was going to be what it was, you just wanted to make sure you had their full focus.
And we had the slip up against Loris North, but we had the turnovers. Darren Evans wasn't there. That was just a weird game for us. And obviously, when we faced them in a rematch in the sectional championship in 2005, the score ended up being 55-3, and everybody knew from then on it was our title to lose. How is you as a head coach, how do you keep a team focused when you have such dominating victories like that in the playoffs and throughout the season to keep everybody, like you said, from becoming complacent?
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, especially when you're that physically talented, and you're not challenged every week. And you know, I think that the game you're talking about, the Lawrence North game, again, a lot of these games are very vivid. The losses are a lot more vivid in my memory than
yes.
the wins.
Yes.
But you know, we had a saying that, you know, real men play man, and we were playing man coverage, and their quarterback went 5 out of 8 that game, and all 5 were you know, vertical throws for touchdowns and
bombs.
So, you know, just one of those things where, again, I think that helped us. I mean, that motivated us. But if you look at, you know, you look across college football, I mean, and it's kind of like that today. I mean, very seldom, you know, are you getting somebody that's an undefeated team. Now, you know, obviously we're going to have one this year, but even the Alabamas of the world, you know, lose a game now and then. Georgia lost a game earlier this year. Georgia's probably a top 2 team in my opinion, but, you know, they lose a game and they're done. Fortunately, with the playoff system in Indiana, you can lose in the regular season and still have an opportunity in the playoffs. But that is a difficult thing to do. I mean, we've dealt with that. At IMG. You know, we lost our first game in 4 years this year.
Yes.
Now we did lose a national champion. You know, which it wasn't like we didn't
lost to some bum squad or something like that.
What's that?
I don't want to say you guys lost to some bums out there on the
street. No, we'd have to fly out to California and play the defending national champions who won the national championship.
That was a very – and I want to talk to that. We're going to take a break here in a moment. There's one other thing I want to ask you before we do that, though, Coach. After we won the state championship in 2005, right after the birth of your son, Will, who just turned 13, right?
Yeah.
Oh, so it's so crazy that your kids. I love seeing pictures of Trinity and him. And it's like these little kids that they grow up so fast. And I think about the same thing with Michael Tutsi, Coach Tutsi's son, who will be playing for a national championship next Saturday with NDSU. And it's just so crazy to see these kids that were running around the program back in the day on the sidelines, being ball boys and being little cheerleaders. And seeing where they've come to and gone, it's just so crazy now. But did you ever feel like you would leave Warren after that state championship?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes you just kind of have a gut feeling. And, you know, I think that, you know, going back to 2003, quite honestly, I mean, you know, when my mom passed away, you know, you just kind of put it on autopilot. And for 3 straight years, I think the way I probably coped with that loss was I put everything into winning football games. And, you know, that was a sole focus and I had – my kids were young and it's a good thing my wife was there because she, you know, she was the primary parent. And that's the way it is in a lot of – families, but
especially coaches wise,
but you know, the kids were young, and you know, just kind of put your head down and just kept going forward. So, you know, after we won the third one, we had everybody back. I mean, we were loaded the next year, and
yes.
You know, and I think it was just felt like it was time for the next, you know, the next step and next journey in life. And you know, and you can always second guess yourself, and which I do sometimes. But I mean, the reality is that you know, I felt like that, you know, we were leaving the place better than what we found it, and that the footprint was there, and the guys that we left in charge. You know, Steve took over as head coach and gave Dave Burton and Fred Roman an opportunity to be the offensive coordinators, and you know, you know, and arguably, I knew it, but arguably, you know, I think the 2016 probably was the best high school football team in Indiana history. I think there's a great argument for that. I think people have short-term memories. I hear that every time somebody wins a state championship. But
it's more or less when they go undefeated.
When they go undefeated.
That's what it comes
out
to.
You're exactly right. But I think that, you know, if you look at what that team did in 2006, which I wasn't there. But if you look at what they did over 4 years,
mm-hmm.
nobody's ever done it, you know.
Correct.
And so to be able to do that, to finish it in the fashion they did, they were so dominant. I think they had to beat Carmel twice that year because they played Carmel in a state championship game.
Shut them out in the first one, 28-0.
Yeah, and, you know, that's a rivalry. You know, the Ben Davis, Warren, Carmel, Warren, you know, those are tremendous rivalries in and of themselves. But, you know, it was just something I think, again, I think it was more just something internally, not because, you know, of anything that happened. I mean, but, you know, you win three in a row, and, you know, and having gone through the, like I said, the internal struggles that I'd gone through, I just felt like it was time for a challenge, and went to Tulsa Union. Boy, did I get one. So,
a lot of the guys on the 03 team, they like to debate, and I don't like to put in my 2005 team because I think the more fun debate is between 03 and 06, and it's interesting to hear you say that you feel that the 06 team was the best team out of all and the best team in state history because I think they don't really understand it because they weren't there, but I see it as a culmination of every team before them, what they had to go through, that journey, and that 2006 just being the absolute pinnacle of our dynasty and our run. And it's like when Indy Star named that team the greatest team of all time, I didn't feel as a slight to 2005 or any other teams. I hope they may have, but I look at it as this because they went through so much before when they went through and went undefeated and got named that. It was like we were all being named the greatest teams of all time. That's what I felt. And my other question to you is, or other thing I want to say to you is, there was, when I first started this show, I had a topic and a list and stuff, and one of the topics was if he had stayed. Meaning, if you had stayed, I feel like four, of course, we get done. I think five and six, we probably could have won in 07 and 08. Of course, we had the team to win in 09, but I just think, like, man, where would we be at right now if Coach Wright had stayed? I kind of see us like how Trinity was for, like, the last 10 years or so, where they won, like, nine straight state championships. But I truly feel like we would have been a program. Not necessarily that we weren't a national powerhouse, but we were definitely going to be a team kind of like what you have right now at IMG, where we were going to be top five nationally each and every year, and we're going to continue to roll out those great players and great teams, and it was just going to be a problem for so many people over the years. But I truthfully understand why you left, but you had to do some things on your own. It takes coaching, especially coaching at a high level like at Warren Central, takes a lot out of a person, especially when you're doing it for so long. I mean, you have your wife, you had a newborn son, you had a little girl that you're trying to raise too. Sometimes you have to take a step back and spend time with your family and just get a recharge and just change sceneries a lot. So I understand completely why you left. Do I wish you had stayed sometimes? Absolutely. Actually, I would love to be sitting in our office in the field house and looking at the 10 straight state championships that I'm sure you would have won or something like that. And just seeing this, looking back and seeing all the greatness that we've had come through this program. But, you know, things have changed. Now, God has a plan for everything, Coach.
Yeah, I mean, you hit on a lot of different things there. I would say this, going to your first point about – I hate to say which team was the greatest ever. I'll say this, 2003 probably was – the most talented team that I had, but it was a year where, you know, we went through a lot of adversity and it was first state championship, so they set the table, you know, for the future, and that 2016 were freshmen, and I guess maybe that's why I kind of feel, you know, like you said, it was just an accumulation of the success and what had been laid before them. You know, I try not to look back. I think that, you know, when I left in 2005, like I said, the everything was set. I mean, you know, with the tutoring program been in place, the academic program which I think is viable, the college placement with those kids. I mean, just all the things, the people that were there. It was the right timing. And of course, it allowed Coach Tutsi to be like Coach of the Year the next year.
Yes.
You know, give him an opportunity. But I think also that you can't project. If somebody had stayed, you know, what the outcome would have been, would it have been any different? Because every program, you know, and sometimes you become, you know, a victim of your own success. I mean, you have to make sure that you continue to get better. And you know, those teams that have followed, I think they've done pretty good themselves. Highs and lows, you know, you just don't know. Football is a game; it's much like life. Where every season's different.
Yes,
it's
very true.
You know, I think that, you know, what's been accomplished at Warren, you know, since then is been pretty remarkable as well. And, you know, there's when you look at what Ben Davis did in the 80s and 90s and what we did in the 2000s, really you just kind of reset the standard of, you know, the level of play. And I think that's why I think it's be hard to project how many – you know, if somebody stayed someplace, given the success, how many of their state championships they would have won or the success, because I think the competition has continued to get better, and it's become tougher to win a state championship, especially at the big school level. And over the last 4 years in Indiana, you've had four different teams win a state championship. And all from the mid-conference. And I think really it's gotten down to who's had the best senior class and for the most part. So, you know, you can't look back, you know, that because you just don't know. But I've been blessed to have some really great experiences, you know, since then. That's always going to be a special part of it, a part of my coaching journey, no doubt about it. You know, you know, something that I'm always will cherish. And, you know, it was when I went to Carmel, I always laugh because it was interesting being on the inside of that. You know, of the quote unquote rival. But I think what you find, you know, when I got to Carmel was, you know, the kids at Carmel and the kids at Warren have a lot more in common when it comes down to the work ethic and expectations and all those things. And you see that all across that metropolitan. They do it Ben Davis, you know, they do it Center Grove. You see that. That's something that I think that's grown over the last 20 some years. And so, you know, it's something I think that everybody that's been a part of that, of the conference, should be able to take a lot of pride in. And I know that I took pride in it at Warren, took pride in it at Carmel, and it's fun to follow it now from South Florida.
Awesome, awesome. Well, thank you, Coach. Let's take a break here for a moment.
True Warrior Football Podcast is sponsored by
Warrior Aid, made painstakingly by us, the Warriors. It will make you a winner. You'll be beating Ben Davis in no time. You might even win a state championship or two. It's good, my brothers. Drink it.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, you heard it best from the man, the legend, K-Dub himself, Coach Wright. Such an honor to sit and talk with him for that interview. It was just great, like a kid in a candy store, man. When we sat down, I was just like wide-eyed and glued, because I've been wanting this interview to speak with him for so long, and I was so glad that he was able to sit down and talk with me about it. And, folks, that is just part one. Part two comes next week, ladies and gentlemen. So thank you, folks, for listening. Stay tuned for more. I got a lot of great things coming down the pipe for everybody, all my listeners. So many great things are coming up for this show, and I just can't wait to get them all out there to you. So, as always, Warrior Band, take us away.